Hello, this is Libby Wagner, president of Libby Wagner & Associates out of Seattle, Washington, and I am speaking to a wonderful friend and colleague, Stuart Cross, from Morgan Cross Consulting in the UK. And he is a brilliant strategist who has just published a new book, The CEO's Strategy Handbook, How to Create, Sustain, and Accelerate Profitable Growth. Stuart, welcome to the call today. It's great to have an opportunity to interview you.
Oh, hi, Libby. Thanks for inviting me. It's great to be here.
Well, you're so welcome. You know, one of the things that I love about your new book, Stuart, and not only is it a help to me as a business owner and someone who helps clients with strategy, it's at the top of my Christmas list for my clients this year, is you really make it accessible to people. I think sometimes we try to make strategy way too complicated. Do you find that to be true with your clients?
I know. There's some kind of aura around strategy, isn't there, that you need an IQ of 170 before you're even allowed to discuss strategy. And to my mind, it's a lot simpler than that. So what I've tried to do in the book is to just show business leaders and people that there are relatively simple steps you can take to build a great strategy.
Well, I know that a lot of the people that I work with really appreciate a simple strategy, you know, and a simple approach. And it doesn't mean that, you know, the implementation is easy, which we're going to talk about. But why do you think so many companies struggle to develop and deliver a winning strategy? What is it about this mystique or this process that gets people confused or overwhelmed?
Yeah, I think there's probably a few things. I think the first thing is that a lot of people confuse strategy and planning. And so they'll say they want a strategy, and what they really mean is I want a plan. And plans are great, but a plan and a strategy are two different things. You know, I would define a plan as about allocating resources over a period of time. So it's about how do we allocate resources to hit certain goals and targets and budgets. Whereas strategy is about setting a winning direction for the business. It's saying what kind of organization are we aiming to be and how are we going to succeed in the future. Now, those are two very different questions. And the trouble is, if you start off with a planning mindset, you very quickly get turn the whole thing into a budgeting process. And so people, things become very incremental quite quickly. Rather than thinking about kind of bigger changes and bigger ideas, things become very small scale and incremental. So I think that's one reason. Another reason that I found with some of my clients and in my experience back working in my corporate career was that to deliver a great strategy, you need real alignment at the top. Everybody has to be absolutely joined at the hip. And where that doesn't happen, things fall apart quite quickly. And so just a tiny gap in the boardroom, I think, becomes a much bigger difference once you're outside the boardroom. So that would be a second reason. And I think lastly, if I give you three of them, the third one is that if a company sees strategy as separate to the day job, then there is trouble ahead. And I think you have to find ways of integrating the strategy of the organization and what people do on a day-to-day basis. You can't think of them as two separate things.
Well, I know that when we think about a strategy, you often hear people say strategic planning, which I think is just confirming what you're saying about the confusion that people sometimes have, thinking that...
I know, to my mind, I was going to say strategic planning is an oxymoron.
Right, exactly. Because they really are separate activities, and that would be an important thing for a leader to not only keep in mind, but perhaps to model and practice.
Yeah, and I think that that a plan does fall out of a strategy. If you've got a clear direction, if you've got a sense of where you're going, then a plan will naturally fall out of it, out of that. But it's very difficult for a strategy to fall out of a plan. Mm. And so really thinking about where you want your business to be, what the direction is for your organization, I think is critical time. And if you confuse that with planning, if you confuse it effectively with budgeting, you're not going to make the progress you might want to make.
What's interesting to me is to hear that from your perspective, this confusion of strategy and planning, the movement very quickly to talking about money and budgeting, this is not just an American phenomenon. This is happening all across businesses across the globe, essentially.
Yeah, I'm based in the UK. I've worked with American companies. I've worked with British companies, European businesses. And I used to head the strategy team for a company called Boots the Chemist, which is about a $10 billion UK retailer. And they linked strategy and planning. It all became one part of the same process. And what it effectively meant was that if you weren't careful, what you were really talking about was how to get 3% more sales growth or 4% extra profit growth next year. And when you ask those kind of questions, you can probably find a way to do things by nudging gross margin, cutting costs slightly here, adding a few product ranges there, instead of saying, where do we actually want to take the business? How are we going to succeed in 3-4 years' time? And what do we need to be doing now to get there?
Great. Well, okay, so it seems like a logical question then to ask you to help us differentiate some things here. I mean, what makes a good strategy?
Can I give you a few things, Libby, that I think, because I think there's obviously the development and there's the delivery side, and but on the development side, I think there has to be a real clarity of direction, and that means keeping things simple. And in the book, I introduce a little concept I've developed called the strategy arrow. And that has four elements to it. And I think if you are trying to describe a strategy, I think there are four elements to doing that. And the first is to identify and articulate your number one goal. So what is your top goal of your organization? Above everything else, what is it you want your organization to achieve in terms of performance? So I've just been working with a client of mine where it's really about growing their customer base. They want to grow their number of customers. And that is a goal they've set themselves a certain goal. And they have been able to articulate that throughout the organization. And once you've clarified your goal, everything else becomes a lot simpler. It's all about how do we achieve that goal. Mm-hmm. But the trick is getting down to one goal, rather than the 5, 10, 20 goals that many organizations face.
Let me just ask you a clarifying question here, Stuart. So when you think about the number one goal, do you think that's related to a company's mission, or is that completely different?
It's different. I see it's kind of sitting below the mission. To me,
okay.
We might get caught up in jargon, but to me, a mission is about why your organization exists in the first place, what
okay.
it's there to achieve.
Okay.
What a goal is, it may last only kind of 3 years, 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. It starts to set where do we take the company next? What's the next part of the journey for the organization? Mm-hmm. And what's going to be the most motivating, engaging, aligning way of helping the organization make sense of what's important?
So in the strategy arrow, the point of the arrow is your number one goal.
Yes. And once you've got that clear, the other bits become a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
The second element of the arrow is, I called it the playing field, where you play. And that's really about being able to articulate the products and services you offer, your target customers, the channels you reach those customers, and your geographical reach. So what is your playing field? And just helping organizations make sense of what their existing playing field is, never mind where they want to go, can be really valuable. The third element is really about how you're going to win, what you're going to differentiate on, whereabouts are you going to lead, in what way are you going to lead? Are you going to be a product leader? Are you going to be a cost leader? Are you going to be a convenience leader? In what way are you going to win as an organization? And those three things really set the direction.
Of that one, Stuart.
Well, if you think about Nike, that's clearly a product leader. That is all about customers saying it costs more, but it's worth it. It's all about having the latest products. And I think there are five generic types of leadership, five generic types of ways that organizations can win. So the first is being a product leader. The second is being a cost leader, where your customers say it's the most amazing value. So I'm trying to pick US examples for you, Libby. So Southwest Airlines or Costco would be a cost leader. The third option you have is to be a convenience leader, where your customers say everything is so hassle-free. So Amazon is a convenience leader. McDonald's is a convenience leader. The fourth way that you can win as an organization is to be a service leader, where it's really all down to your frontline team and the expert, knowledgeable, friendly expert advice that they give. So Home Depot, Nordstrom's are the kind of classic service leaders. Singapore Airlines is another great example. And the fifth way that you can lead as a business and win as a business is as a solutions leader, where you give bespoke, personalized, customized solutions to your customers. So IBM, with their corporate clients, are really a solutions leader. McKinsey, as a consulting business, is a solutions leader. You know, customers say it's just what I needed. It's a bespoke, personalized solution. And what companies need to do, and business leaders need to do, is to choose which of those five types of leadership they really want to be famous for, because it's very difficult for organizations to be famous for more than one and to organize themselves around more than one of these dimensions. So you need to be kind of good enough, competitive on all five, but you need to choose where you really want to lead as an organization. And that's going to be some kind of crossover between the needs of your target customers and the capabilities you have as a business.
Okay, that's really helpful. And I think the examples, you know, help us kind of look at what it means to be a leader in one of those particular elements. And I'm guessing that the reason that it's difficult to lead in more than one area is because the investment is just high. Or is it just because we need that one point on the arrow and we need to be really clear so that everyone knows? What's the reason it's difficult to succeed in more than one area?
Well, one reason is that if you start to hedge your bets and try and lead on a few different directions, it starts to dampen down the effect of where you're really trying to lead as an organization. So if Apple, for example, wanted to be a cost leader, it would be very difficult for them to be a cost leader as well as a product leader. They are a classic product leader. It's all about having the very latest products and people being willing to pay more for them. So that is one reason from a customer point of view. But internally as well, it's very difficult for an organization to be a solutions leader, for example, that is all about bespoke, customized solutions, and as well having the absolute best products and being the lowest cost. Organizationally, it becomes dysfunctional trying to
do
that. And where you haven't chosen, what I found, I was working with a cosmetics business where they hadn't really chosen, and it's a slight cliche, but it was true, is that the marketing director was acting as if the company was a product leader. The manufacturing director was acting as if the company was a convenience leader. The sales leader was acting as if the company was a service leader. And the chief finance officer was acting as if the business was a cost leader. You need some, I always think a good strategy is like waving a magnet over iron filings. Gets everything pointing in the same direction.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what making this kind of choice starts to do. It gives that focus and alignment to the organization as well.
That's a great example. I always, one of the things that I talk about when you're bringing your executive team to the table is that, you know, they all show up wearing what I like to call their turf hats. And so the marketing director comes, you know, or the chief marketing officer comes with, his or her own sort of focus, agenda, and paradigm. And it seems like it's the leader's job to make sure that everyone is really, to use another cliche, you know, on the same page, knowing exactly mm-hmm. who they are and where they're going.
Yeah, and so they can hold each other to account as well, and start to work as a team rather than just a collection of individuals who meet every now and then, but really start to work as a team. And if you see, probably, you know, as you go around from client to client, Libby, you start to see those organizations that have a really clear sense of direction. The turfdom that comes into those meetings is probably less than where
right.
that direction is less clear.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so what you'll find is that once your direction is clear and everybody is bought into that and really supports that, progress becomes a lot quicker. Everything that you want to do becomes a lot easier to make happen. I'm not saying things become easy, but everyone is, you know, pointing in the same direction, trying to achieve the same thing. But if you haven't made these choices, if you haven't talked about them, if you haven't articulated them, then people will make up their own solutions quite reasonably. But they're not necessarily all going to be in the same direction.
Right, right. So knowing exactly what your goal is, knowing where you're going to play, identifying that winning differentiator. So those are the elements of a good strategy. Anything else that would help us define what a great strategy is?
Well, the one other thing on my strategy arrow is an agenda. I call it the agenda for action.
Mm-hmm.
But it's probably a handful, somewhere between 3 and 6 usually, big objectives that will drive the activities of your organization to go from where you are now to the direction that you set for yourself, the goal, the playing field, how you're going to win as an organization. So what are the big objectives that you need to get there? And there's a big company in the UK called Tesco. I don't know if you've heard of them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Big grocer.
Yeah.
So they must turn over 100 billion. They're like Walmart. They're big in Asia as well. And for the 10 years, they have had the same agenda. They have had the same set of corporate objectives, which is to be number one in the UK, to have a serious international business, to be as big in non-food as they are in food, and to develop and deliver a range of what they call retailing services,
mm-hmm.
which are things like their dot-com business, mobile phone business. They're now opening a bank in the UK. So the projects have changed underneath those headings, but the objectives have stayed the same.
Right.
And I think having that consistent, focused agenda, set of objectives, also helps the organization understand what's important and where they need to really focus their efforts.
It probably also helps them maintain some momentum. I imagine, and certainly in some of the businesses that I've seen, you know, especially on businesses that either began as an entrepreneurial business or I would still qualify as an entrepreneurial business, you know, a massive change in direction requires some, you know, re-energizing startup movement, you know, but if you have some kind of solid direction that you know about and you do, but you change your activities, I would imagine you could create some really significant momentum toward growth.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're still prioritizing about which are the most important projects on a year-by-year basis, but you're not starting from scratch about what are the things that we're wanting to achieve. You've done that work. You might confirm it every year, but you're not having to do that work. You're really saying, so what are the next most important things we really need to be focused on now as a business within the direction we've set ourselves? That just, again, it makes things, it doesn't make them easy, but it makes them easier.
Right,
and people can
right.
can get their heads around it.
So, you know, Stuart, one thing, so I'll play, I don't know, contrarian, devil's advocate, whatever. I'm thinking about some of my clients right now who, you know, they have, their businesses have suffered in the past few years. You know, they have tried to be resilient and, you know, have certainly made strides to do so, but you know, some of them, you know, they say, hey, look, Libby, you know, a strategy process or having a strategy retreat or having those kinds of conversations, you know, that's a luxury right now. We've got our noses down and our focus is on, mm-hmm. you know, getting revenues in the door and, you know, surviving. So we don't have time for strategy. I mean, you know, it seems counterintuitive, but, you know, what would you say to a company that's sort of feeling that way, that they're trying to juggle maybe a long-term vision with, you know what, I'm just trying to make it happen right now?
Yeah, I was talking to Chief Financial Officer this morning of a retail business in the UK. They're a tiles retailer, floor tiles, wall tiles, turnover about probably about $400 million, something like that. And we were basically having this conversation. He's saying that the economy is tough. They're really just focused on trading their way, managing the costs, and trading as best they can in the current economic climate. But as we had a conversation, we realized there were still growth opportunities for that business. There were customers, for example, that they don't currently reach that they could be targeting. There were channels to reach those customers that they weren't exploiting. And even in a down economy, there are still opportunities for growth. And you have to keep the cost down. Yes, you have to trade hard. But there is still an opportunity, I think, for organizations to grow, to develop, and to think about the future. And if times are really tough, you're not asking them to bet the farm, but what are some pragmatic ways that you can continue to develop your business? Because if you're not developing it, if you're not growing it, the chances are that your competitors are somewhere along the line, your competitors will be. And so in that sense, you will be going backwards. You have to be doing something. You can't just stand still. Mm-hmm. And at the end of it, the guy's gone away to think about what are those list of opportunities that they could do within their current business model and within their current business mindset, if you like. Mm-hmm. They're still there.
Yeah. I know that groups that I have worked with, a couple of global companies who are really, you know, they're not number one in their market right now, and they, you know, they're number two or number three. They'd like to change that position. They, you know, they were on the cusp of that right before we had, you know, the challenges with the economy mm-hmm. in the last few years. And so, you know, I've seen them really struggle, the leadership, you know, both the executive leadership team and maybe the, you know, business units, see them really struggle with almost trying to manage, you know, anxiety and panic about, you know, dealing with existing customers and not losing them and feeling like there just weren't enough hours in the day to do the strategic work. And that kind of reminds me of, you know, a chance to speak with strategist David Meister, whose last strategy book was called Strategy and the Fat Smoker.
Yeah.
You know what to do, but you're not doing it. So, I mean, where do strategies fail? What, you know, I mean, I think people have a lot of great ideas. Why don't they work sometimes, or why don't we do it?
I know. I think because people often say, do strategies fail in development, or do they fail in implementation? And I think, as you say, really, many times in an organization, the ideas are there. And there's a sense of where you're going. They might not have articulated it quite crisply enough, but it's there. And then on the delivery side, again, many organizations are quite good at managing projects and getting stuff done. I think actually what happens is that it's not development or implementation. It's the gap in between the two. You know, I often say that strategies get lost in translation between the development, the direction, and then getting it into projects. And to my mind, it's issues such as alignment. It's issues such as really communicating the strategy across the organization. Critical one, I think, is resource allocation. I find that many companies want the direction, but they're not willing to change the way that resources are allocated across the organization to make it happen? You know, what's the changes, the organizational changes required to pull the strategy off? It's the way, is your best talent deployed on the most important issues? Mm-hmm. Have you set the right kind of KPIs and incentives in the organization? It's these elements of translation that form the connection between the direction that you're setting and the specific projects that you have on the ground. If you can get those elements right and really focus on those and don't neglect them, then you have a much better chance, I think, of pulling your strategy off and actually making it happen.
So you're reminding me of something, and I don't know if this is an expression that you would hear or use in the UK, but you know, it's that idea that you're walking your talk. So let's say you come up with this, you develop this great strategy of a compelling vision and a goal, and you know, people could really get excited about getting behind it. And then they realize in the translation that it means they have to do all of this stuff, but they're not going to get any more people, money, or resources to do it.
Yeah.
And so now what happens is you sort of, you know, at best you're dampening excitement, and at worst you're creating malicious compliance, you know, across your organization to try to move. I mean, how do you help companies deal with that gap? I think that's a really important thing that not many people think about.
Yeah, one of the things that I do now, I didn't when I started my consulting business, but I do now, is I have the conversation with them up front about what kind of change they're really up for, so that we really understand the scope. And people will say immediately, oh, I'm up for anything if the results are worth it. But if you then start to talk through some potential scenarios and say, well, are you willing to shut some factories? Are you willing to shut down this business? Are you willing to create this completely new enterprise? Then you start to say, you start to get a sense of what's really up for grabs and what isn't up for grabs. Because if the leadership team aren't really willing to consider certain things, then you need to make them out of scope. Because if they're not really willing to follow it through to lead those kind of scale of changes, it's not going to happen. And you're just deluding the organization and yourselves, really. So I tried to have that conversation now as one of my first conversations, rather than after we've done all the work.
Mm-hmm.
And that has really helped. It creates some great conversations,
mm-hmm,
about what kind of change are we really up for here.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, because I suspect sometimes that in the visioning, dreaming phase of creating a great strategy, visionary leaders, by nature, the way that I talk to folks when I'm trying to help them have this conversation is, but you know, by nature they're disruptive, because they're supposed to be articulating the possibilities of change. And then when you are moving toward, all right, well, let's actually implement this, you've got your management group whose primary role is to, you know, create consistency, stability, and actually make it happen. And, you know, they are either literally or figuratively, you know, throwing their hands up in the air going, oh, my gosh, you're kidding, you know. So that tension is always there. And I think it's necessary, actually, for an organization to grow. I mean, do you find that in your conversations with companies about sort of managing that tension between the great ideas and the actual implementation, the courageous conversations not only need to happen at the very top, but then, you know, as they're going down?
Yeah, I was watching a documentary on the BBC last night about Steve Jobs, about how he asked the impossible of his people, and they, you know, they came up with the impossible, or as close to as they could possibly get. And maybe some organizations can work like that. Maybe Apple was able to work like that because of the nature of Steve Jobs. But what I've found for most of my clients, it's best to have the entire group in the room at the same time, rather than saying, here's the business leader, he's going to have the ideas, they're going to set the direction, and then we're going to hand it over to the deliverers. I actually want to get greater involvement in the direction setting. I think there are certain things that only the leadership team can do, such as set really decide on the level of ambition of the organization. Mm-hmm. But actually, I did a project with a bathroom manufacturer about 18 months ago, and we had a group of 50 in the room. So it wasn't just the top managers, it was the middle managers as well, mm-hmm. of that organization. And the middle managers were just as radical, in some ways more ambitious than the top managers, who were hesitant because they thought the organization wouldn't accept certain changes. And when we're actually in the room, what we found was that the middle managers were more ambitious and more potentially radical with the kind of changes and the mm-hmm. developments that they were willing to lead than the top managers were. You just don't know.
Yeah.
But what you find is the more you involve people early on, the better chance you have of effective delivery.
Yeah.
Because you build that engagement.
So really that meeting allowed you to kind of tap into some, you know, potential innovation and creativity that you would have missed out on had the conversation been smaller.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's not going to work in every instance, but mm-hmm. but I think there are ways and means that you can create involvement in the strategy development process. It just doesn't have to be the job of the top guys. They
right.
have to be involved and they have to lead the process, but they don't have to do everything. And sometimes if you trust your organization a bit more, you'll be surprised at the answers they come up with.
Yeah. Well, Stuart, let me ask you I've just got one more question to ask for folks listening. What could a business leader do today? I mean, other than they definitely need to order your book, the CEO Strategy mm-hmm. Handbook. I can't recommend it enough. I think, you know, not only does it make these ideas accessible, there are processes and how-tos and helpful tips and guidelines. I mean, it really is just great. So other than that, what could a business leader do today to create a better strategy for his or her business? I mean, right now, I always think, well, any time is a great time to do the right thing. But right now, at the end of the year, when a lot of folks are thinking about, you know, the coming year and opportunities for growth and things like that, what can a leader do right now?
I think one of the most liberating things that they could do and then share back with their team is to quite simply would be to articulate that number one goal for their organization. So do they see it as a sales goal, a profit goal? Is it a financial goal, or is it a non-financial goal? Is it something about customer numbers or customer satisfaction or customer loyalty? Or is it about brand perception? What is it that is a measurable goal that they could hold the organization to account against that would really motivate, engage, and align people and give a sense of both ambition and direction? Because once you have the goal clear and crystallized, then the strategies become a lot simpler to develop.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I have it at the point of my strategy arrow in the book. But I think if business leaders do nothing else, if they can start to articulate that number one goal, come back in the new year, share that with their team, they will be surprised at then what kind of new ideas and new proposed initiatives they might start to see happening in their organization.
Well, I can't thank you enough, Stuart, for taking time to talk with us today and just to give us a glimpse into all the things that you've learned about leading lots of strategy projects with many different industries and groups. I just really thank you for your insight and your time. And if people wanted to contact you to ask you more questions or to find you or to follow up with you in terms of your book, how could they reach you?
All the usual ways. The main way is my website, which is morgancross.co.uk, morgancross.co.uk, and all the contact details are on there.
Perfect.
And I'd be more than delighted to follow up with anyone.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much again for your time and for sharing some wisdom and provocative ideas here. Really appreciate having you today.
Libby, it's always a pleasure.
All right, take care, Stuart.
You too. Take care now.